WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. It's in the middle of the summer. And it's time to get started. The second half is beginning on Monday. Here we go to the July 4th weekend, and we have a trade truce. I don't know if you call it a trade truce. We're going to call it a trade ceasefire. And a very strong June to cap out the first half of 2019. For the week, Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped about 120 points, but good, and S&P 500 dropped about a third of a percent. However, small cap companies up 1.1% for the week. Year to date, though, that's really what matters. Forget the week. Forget about the week. Now, I'm going to give us year to date so far, but this is exactly what I love. First headline article, Wall Street Journal, as we speak, stocks hover near record gains. Growth worries linger. And that's just the way this is always going to be. As investors head into the second half of the year, they are grappling with signs that the economy's expansion is slowing. Many are finding it increasingly difficult to discern just how much longer the run can continue. Right, well, runs don't ever continue forever. That's just part of markets, and we know that. We know that we just had a full-on correction slash bear market in December of 2018. So only about six, seven months ago, we were grappling with a full-blown correction, a full-blown bear market. Worst December Christmas Eve of all time and the worst December since 1931. And then we come off from that and we start 2019 with a couple of sighs of relief. The Fed says, maybe we won't raise rates. There's optimism around trade. And all of a sudden markets come back to smiling, going forward, moving forward. And here we hit the beginning of the second half of 2019. And we look back and we say, wow, despite all of that hand-wringing over trade, which again, just we started the year out, things looked as though there was going to be progress. Then all of a sudden, a couple of months ago, just all the negotiations stopped, dead in the water. We were, quote, 90% of the way there, and now we're starting over. Well, anticipated G20 summit in Japan. Yesterday, this weekend, President Trump meets with President Xi from China, and they effectively say it's ceasefire. Ceasefire for now. So number one, U.S. and China have agreed to resume trade talks. That is number one that markets will focus on Monday morning. Number two, the U.S. has agreed to halt any new or additional tariffs on Chinese products, at least for now. And that means no new $300 billion worth of new tariffs that were just kind of floating and hanging over the head of the market. That's off the table for now. Number three, the U.S. has agreed to allow U.S. companies to sell components to Chinese telecom giant Huawei. Huawei has become a major pawn in this entire story as they are the Chinese equivalent of, let's call it a Cisco plus an AT&T plus a Verizon all put together into one in China and effectively building out the 5G network. The question is, do we want them having our components so that they could potentially have access to our data here in the United States? That will continue to be a pawn in this deal and still to be determined. Year to date. Again, all of the back and forth about what's happening this year, the reason the Fed's ready to lower rates is because we have slowing growth around the world, ever so slightly slowing economic numbers here in the United States. Doesn't matter, S&P 500 up almost 7% for this month. So the month of June, that's the best June we have seen since 1955. Year to date, up 17% for the S&P 500 during the first 6 months of the year, 2019. That's the best first half of a year we've seen since 1997. Dow up 14% for the first half of 2019. That's the best first half of the Dow since 1999. So as you came into this year, we had this tremendous amount of volatility. Obviously, in December, people were running for the exits. And I want to talk about volatility for a minute. Actually, let me back up. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Let me set the table for what we're doing today. Obviously, the headlines are around trade. And obviously, we just had an invite to the Kim Jong-un, North Korean leader of North Korea to come to the United States. That's about nuclear talks, totally separate from President Xi Jinping from China. That's about trade talks. But these are geopolitical issues that, at least for now, are starting the second half of 2019 off on the right foot. For today, though, when it comes to thinking about your money and what we're going to learn today, a story of a real life story, we'll call them, of Bruce and Vicky, perfect examples about a couple that was struggling to figure out when it was time for them to pull back on the risk of their portfolio. When was it time? When is it time for you to think about risk reduction in your portfolio? Is it time for you at some point to say, wow, I've been in equities, I've been in stocks, I've done really well, I've lived through all of the turbulence and the volatility, and it's actually done really well for me. I'm glad I hung on. But now that I'm 62 or 64 or 65 or 72, is it time to kind of pull back a little bit and say, I don't need to take 100% risk anymore? Is it time to pull back on the portfolio? And I want to go through a story about a real life couple and talk through or think through some of the things that you should consider as you get to the point where you stop working. So as money stops coming in, and now the only thing that's going to happen to your portfolio is money's going out to you, whether it's through a required minimum distribution or just, hey, I need money for spending. It's a very different calculus. You're no longer smoothing out the big dips in markets with new influxes, with new inflows of cash, because you're no longer making money and saving money. Now it's the opposite. We go through market corrections and money's flowing out. So you're in a hole at times because of markets. And then you're digging deeper into that hole because you have to use the money to spend. How do you smooth that out? And when is it time to reduce risk of the portfolio? And then how much risk do you really need to reduce? We'll also talk about how to, or whether you pay off your mortgage before retirement or not. And what are the things to think about? How about this? Five gorgeous places. This is one of the most popular articles on the website on westmoss.com this past week. Five gorgeous places to retire on a budget. The pricing, by the way, the monthly budgets here are just shocking to me. The West Coast of Ireland, Sinatra, Portugal. I don't know if it's Sinatra. It looks like Sinatra. It's really Sintra, Portugal. There's a place in Cambodia, a little town in Peru, all very affordable to live. And we'll talk about those costs. And then we may get to this. I don't know if we'll get to this or not, but there's a study and an article about that we wrote on how to retire on a cruise ship. Just straight up, you live on the water forever. You have a cabin. There's a lot of different ways to do this. You can effectively buy a condo on a cruise ship. Jake Moss over here is just thumbs up, smiling. You think that's a good idea? Jake here thinks that's a great idea. Join me in the studio here, Jake Moss, age 7, ready to take your calls and questions. Actually, Jake, I'm probably not going to go to the phones just yet. Ryan Ely, though, is here today to take your calls and your questions. Ryan's number and my number directly, and the phone lines are just open them up, wide open. Here we go. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. That's the number here in the studio. Give us a call with your financial questions, anything that's been on your mind. Maybe you're thinking, hey, maybe I can afford. Wes, tell me how I can afford to live on a cruise ship during retirement. Not have a house and go back and forth. Just straight up live on a cruise ship for, I don't know, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. The cost of the cruise ship, if you do it right, might surprise you. That and let's call it the 10 o'clock hour of Money Matters. But give us a call here in the studio. The phone line's open. Your questions answered here today, whether you're thinking about risk reduction or how any of this pertains back to you. What do I do with my 401k? I've been reading about 401ks and they're going to be able to turn them into annuities. What? Maybe I have a Roth IRA or a tax question, or I inherited some money, or I just sold a house and I've got some cash and the stock market's high and the bond market is high because rates are low and there's $14 trillion of negative yielding bond product around the globe right now as we speak. Where do you go? What's this? Is there another piece of the pie? What about this alternative area of income? What about some other ways to generate income for your portfolio? That we can certainly talk about here today. Again, 404-872-0750 is the number, or 1-800-WSB-TALK, which is 800-972-8255. All right, we get a ceasefire, at least for trade. But here's what's also interesting about volatility. Have you thought to yourself, it just seems as though, if you look at this past year, we went from such an extreme at the end of 2018 where it seemed like the world was ending. Everyone's fleeing stocks. People are panicking. Cascade, waterfall decline. And then you turn the page on 2019, a few small, just a few of the dynamics shift ever so slightly. And then all of a sudden, volatility goes way down and stocks start to rise. Have you thought, is this market the way it's, is this normal? Has it always been this way? Well, the reality here is that the CBO Volatility Index, which is referred to as the VIX, the fear index, which measures the amount of panic in the system, dropped 41% in the first half of 2019. That's the biggest first half decline we've seen for almost 30 plus years, since 1990. That's the biggest drop in risk or panic, if you will, since 1990. Part of that's due to the fact that we were near an extreme high in volatility at the end of last year. Worst December since 1931. So we know, though, that if you go back over the last 100 years, the average volatility, adding up all the periods of calm like today and the periods of extreme like December of 1931 or December of 2018, we actually are right in line with history. But we've effectively been going through these very extreme periods of extreme calm and extreme volatility. They've averaged out to be about the same the market has been. So think about the last 10 and 20 years has been very much like the last 100 years on average, but with much more extreme. So it tells me that volatility has to come back. It absolutely has to come back. So before 1990, markets could go down by 10% in a relatively steady way, almost a well-behaved decline. Overall market volatility since the early 90s, again, very similar to the last 100 years. So overall stock market volatility in the world we live in today, on average, it's the same as it's been for a century. The big difference is that we go through these periods of extremely low volatility. About half the time, we're in extremely low periods of volatility, like right now, followed by extremely high volatility, about one-fifth of the time or 20% of the time, relative to, again, average historical volatility. Bottom line, we're living in a time of market extremes. And those market extremes are both less volatile, way less volatile than we're used to, and guess what? Way more volatile than we're used to, making investing just that much harder for us all. And that's why we have Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Your calls, your questions. We're talking about risk reduction, when to pay off the mortgage, how to retire on a cruise ship. Here on Money Matters More, right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB, straight ahead.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. We'll cover breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts throughout the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
They say love is more precious than gold.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning, and we're talking about Trump and Xi ceasefire over trade talks. And we're going to go to at the bottom of the half hour, we're going to go to your calls and questions here on Money Matters. It looks as though the United States, though, if you look at this deal that happened over the weekend, or a deal to not continue to fight, at least for now, the U.S. and China, again, resuming trade talks. The Chinese, we're not going to put on new $300 billion worth of tariffs that had been discussed. And then the U.S. has agreed to allow U.S. companies to sell components to Huawei. It looks as though the United States made a whole bunch of concessions. But if you look at what's been happening, I think that it's still very clear that this is just another step in what's been this tremendous negotiation and edging the United States towards a more fair trade environment with China. I mean, it arguably can't get any worse. The terms that we have had with China for decades, again, if they got any worse, we shouldn't do any trade with them. So getting any step towards freer and fairer trade, and of course the biggest sticking point is intellectual property. And will the Chinese actually make these concessions and then turn them into law? That is the question. will the Chinese government actually make these concessions to us, mostly around property, intellectual property, and actually make that into law? I think that's the biggest sticking point. But we're closer to getting a better trade deal than we have been in history, over the course of history of the United States trade. And this has been a tremendous negotiation. What did China give up? It seems as though they're going to be buying massive amounts of agricultural products. And if you want to, it's a good day for pig farmers who have been struggling here in the United States. It's a good day for soybean farmers who have been struggling here in the United States. If you're a hog farmer in the U.S., you deal with 50% tariffs to China. This is from the Council, the National Pork Producers Council in the United States. 50% tariff on hogs going to China. You don't think that group wants to get free and fair trade? Of course they do. And we're at least slowly getting there. In the bottom of the half hour, we'll go to the phones. 404-872 is the number, 0750. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Or Money Matters straight ahead.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. Sunday morning, we're going to go to the phones. The number here in the studio, it's Sunday morning, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK is the number in the studio. Ryan Ely is here to take your calls and questions. I'm here, Wes Moss. We're in our 11th year now of Money Matters, and happy to be here with you on Sunday mornings. And still taking your calls, exactly what we were doing when we started this, and we'll do it as long as we're able to do this here on Sunday mornings. 800-WSB-TALK and 404-872-0750. Terrell in McDonough. What's going on, Terrell? Or Terrell or Terrell? Oh, here we go. Now can you hear me? Hello, good morning. All right, hang on here. Let's see if we can work the phones, make these work. Can you hear me now? Terrell and McDonough. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. What's going on? How can I help? Okay, let's just keep going. Where are we headed to next, Ryan? Maybe Terrell will come back. Gene in Decatur. Gene, good morning. Welcome to the show. What's going on? How can I help? Oh, we got another. Huh. I wonder if we have a phone problem here on a Sunday morning. Because that's 0 for 2. That's rare. Gene, can you hear me? Okay. Maybe we just have a phone issue. Let me keep going here. And let's try Kim in Atlanta. Let's keep going. Kim joins us from the...
Hi.
Whoa, there we go.
Good morning.
That phone works. Kim, what's going on? How can I help?
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Wow. Obviously, this is just not working.
Hi there.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I think you have a phone problem.
I guess so. We're just going to... We'll fix the phone problem, and we'll go just back to me talking. How about we do that? Until you guys tell me that we should try the phones again? Yeah? Let's try it again? No? Okay. All right. Anyway, well, let's go back to... We still need to talk about Trump and Xi and ceasefire. What did we give up? We haven't gotten to that yet. What did we give up as a country? Or what did we get? What did the United States get? When we went into break, we were talking about how difficult it is for pork producers here in the United States. And it has been this farming is just so difficult, whether you're growing crops or you're raising livestock, you're dealing with disease, you're dealing with infestation, you're dealing with the erratic prices, and then you're dealing with tariffs. And this is a case that U.S. agriculture here in the United States, farmers that are selling, they're raising hogs, they're selling pork to the Chinese, they've got a 50% tariff that they have to worry about. So they're advocating and they are praying to have a more level playing field. And that's exactly, at least we are moving the ball down the field in that respect. Where do we go from here? Now that the talks have resumed, we're going to see Chinese officials that are going to come here to the United States, and then U.S. officials are going to go back to China, and then we're going to have this merry-go-round of trade that's just going to continue on and on. And right now, there's endless opinions on what's going to happen, how a deal is going to get done, when it's going to get done, or if a deal could potentially get done. The bottom line, though, on trade is that in the end, it continues to be more and more clear that a trade war is painful for both sides. We feel the pain. We know that the Chinese have felt the pain, both economically and in their stock market. When we look at what's happening here in the United States, we've seen a little bit of a slowdown in a lot of the economic numbers. We have a jobs report coming up this Friday. We'll see what happens with jobs. The expectation is to add about 165,000 jobs. Last month for May, we added 75,000 jobs, which is again not a great month for the as far as job data is concerned. But in the end, we have to remember that this creates uncertainty. So if you're a CEO or a CFO and you're thinking about what your next expenditure is, you're still worried about all of this trade uncertainty because we don't know economically exactly where we're going to go. When we clear up that uncertainty, it's going to be wonderful for this economy. It'll be great for the Chinese economy. It'll be great for the United States economy. So at some point, so if you think about the pain that both sides are feeling from this, call it self-inflicted pain at this point because we have to get through this. At some point in a street fight among two, let's call it rather equally matched heavyweights, the United States and China, absolute heavyweights, if you're to look at these two in a street fight, at some point as they pound on each other, they realize they'd be better off not pummeling each other to death. In this case, and in many cases economically, the outcomes are eventually get to whoever is most incentivized to do a deal. People respond to incentives. One of my favorite economists used to have on his email signature after his name and his address, the quote, people respond to incentives. If you study economics, if you can remember that one very important fundamental truth about economics, that drives economic decisions on a micro level. It drives, so whether you're walking into the Urban Mart gas station to buy something, you respond to incentives. Companies respond to incentives, and then entire economies respond to incentives. That's a fundamental truth that permeates its way all the way through every system, both micro and macro. And at some point, as we are pounding on each other to death economically, in this case, there's so many incentives on both sides that if you really think about this and look at beyond just the headlines and the fog and the smoke of all of this, at some point, both countries have more incentives to come to a deal than they have to continue to fight. And if you think about this, has been decades and decades of unfair trade. If it takes a year and a half for this to work out, it's a small fraction of time. If it takes 2 years to work this thing out, it's a small window of time to set us up for the next 10 years and 20 years and 50 years. Now, you say, oh, well, we don't have time. We have an election coming up. And yes, we do. We have an election coming up. And the administration, the White House, the president, he wants to have a good economy for voters. He wants a good report card in 2020. And yes, the timetable to do a deal, will continue to create a little bit of pressure to do something. Trump says that he's fine to not do a deal. And he loves that the money is pouring in from China because of the 25% tariffs. We all understand, though, that, and I think his case here is that they manipulate their currency and they're effectively can offset tariffs by having a cheaper currency so that people can still buy their goods because their currency is lower. But in the end, we are still the ones paying the tariffs. We buy a radio or a can opener. I think can opener is my preferred economic example. The can opener business, low-end manufacturing, left the United States and went to other countries. We don't make can openers here anymore because we can only make can openers for $5, where if we outsource them to China with shipping, we can make them $1 for $1. That's what's been shipped out of the United States. And at some point, we've got to see some sort of progress on this. And I think we will. And that's the prevailing thought here. Forget whatever economist you want to look at or speak to or poll you see. It's really about countries responding to incentives to get a deal done. And I think over time, that'll happen. Let's talk about a couple of points here. And I said we're going to talk about when is it time to reduce risk. Here we are in this. I've already talked about the fact that we have extreme volatility in the United States stock market. Average volatility over the last two or three decades has been the same as it's been over the past century. The difference here, though, are the extremes. If you average it all together, similar VIX over time, or the VIX is the fear index. It measures the amount of panic in the system, the amount of fear in the system of people hedging, thinking, hey, markets are going to continue to go down. We go into a sell-off, you see the VIX spike up, measuring more fear in the system. What we have seen are these periods of time where the water is just very calm and still, and you have these tiny little sell-offs that don't lead to anything big, and that's what we saw for the whole first half. It was just this nice escalator ride north. Here we are at the end of the first half, plus 17% on the S&P 500, plus 14% on the Dow. Been a really good two quarters following a really rough fourth quarter of 2018. And now you look at your portfolio, you look at retirement, you say, wow, you know, we've gone through this, we've been through the war. Do we prepare ourselves as we go forward for a little less risk? So when is it time? Here we are in a bull market. When's it time to pull your horns in and play it a little bit more safe? When is it time to do that? Well, I'm going to, and probably one of the most common questions I get, and I hear from families that we work with in real life, that is one of the prevailing conversations that everyone's thinking about. Hey, when do I stay? I know equities, that's where I should make the most money over time, but do I have the stomach for that? Am I okay to be 100% invested in stocks? And for most people, at least I've been doing this now well over 20 years, most people, at least families that I work with, do not have the stomach for that. Even though that might be the highest expected return over time, there's just, of course, the highest expected volatility too. And again, when we're shifting towards pulling money from the portfolio, it's a very different conversation, or very different emotionally, by the way, than it is when you're adding money to the portfolio. You go from accumulation, of course, to distribution. So this is a story that I've written about Bruce and Vicky that these are the pseudonames of a real life situation that I would say has played out many times over the years as I've worked with families. But think of these two, Bruce and Vicky, as examples of this, and examples of a couple that are asking the same question. Both are 64. And for the past 5 years, so let's go back to from 59 to 64, they've effectively been 100% in stock. They plan on retiring when they're 67. So they effectively have 3 years from now. If you go back over the past 5 years, they've enjoyed 8-9% a year growth, because that's about what the market has averaged if you go back over the last full 5 years. That's average growth over five. And they're curious and they say, wait a minute, should we get more conservative now with our investments? In a nutshell, they're no longer comfortable with the risk and the discomfort that comes along with that kind of percentage of the portfolio being in stocks. It's worked. They know that this is over time the best asset class to be in, but that's over time. It doesn't mean it's the best asset class this year or even the next 3 years or even the next 5 years. We know that over the next 10 and 15 and 20, it's hands down stocks have beaten almost anything you can throw at it. REITs, by the way, real estate investor trust, I'd also put in the stock category. I'll call REITs a real estate investor trust. Think about buying commercial property through a publicly traded entity. That, if you look at returns for REITs, that's actually been better than the S&P 500. But for the most part, that's still that's in the stock category inside the S&P 500. And thinking about this, it's a legitimate concern and relevant to so many folks, I think, listening when you're approaching retirement. when you're in your 30s, you have plenty of time for the market to recover from significant stumbles, but you have a lot less time to buffer, or a lot less buffer room when you're in your early 60s. And this is the story of Bruce and Vicky. So what do they have to think about, and what are they going to do to reduce the risk a little bit, or maybe a lot, to make them feel more comfortable about the next 5 and the next 10 years? We're going to continue to discuss when Money Matters returns. Stay tuned. You're listening to Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Hi, this is Scott Slade from Atlanta's Morning News and WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be back Monday morning, 4:30 to 9 for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning, and in the 10 o'clock hour, we've got great calls on hold. We might have to just reboot the system. We'll just reboot everything in the 10 o'clock hour, and then we'll be able to hopefully go back to the phones here on Sunday morning. In the meantime, we're talking about this risk reduction. So if you get to retirement and you're in your 60s and you've been investing in stocks for all this time, at what point do you pull back the horns? Say, I don't want to be 100% stocks because I can't handle it anymore. I can't stomach it. And you don't want to take a significant hit to the value of your nest egg right as you start in retirement. I remember back in when I was younger in the business in the 90s, and there was, and it's hard to even remember this because there's so much stock market trauma since then. But if you go through the 1990s, it was such a wonderfully good stock market that averaged in the teens per year. Going into 1999, which was effectively this irrational exuberance that created a tech bubble that then led to the crash in the S&P 500 of almost 50% and a full crash of 80% in the NASDAQ. Leading up to that, investors had so many good years of wonderful stock market returns that there were a lot of folks that didn't think they needed any diversification. And then they got caught up retiring in the year 2000. And if you think about the top of the market back then, which was March of 2000, you had this just absolute crushing stock market. And then we got hit by 9/11 in 2001, and then in effectively a recession. So we had the tech bubble, a recession, 9/11, all over and over and over, all in a, let's call it a relatively short period of time. It was a really tough period of time. And what did people have to do if they didn't have diversification? Well, a lot of folks had to go back to work, because their portfolios were so exposed that they went into retirement with what should have been plenty of money. Now, there were a lot of assumptions at that time, too, that markets were going to continue to grow at double-digit rates forever, which was also a mistake. That was also a fallacy in the plan. But you put together unrealistic expectations and full exposure to risk, people had to go back to work. So that's the case for saying, look, I know at some point it's time to pull back and make your nest egg in a safer place as you head into retirement. So there's a couple of things that you need to think about. I'm going to ask some questions when we get back, because we're talking about how do Bruce and Vicky pull back on their risk as they now know that retirement is in their purview. It's coming up. It's on the horizon. Let's figure out a way to become a little safer. We're going to talk about that and then hopefully go back to the phones here in the 10 o'clock hour of Money Matters. Stay tuned. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.